Hello, everybody, and welcome to our May 2021 the Nutrition Lab support call. And we're here to answer your questions, everything nutrition. So what do you need help with specifically related to your nutrition plan, to resources in the program, and you know, whatever it is that you need help with? I have Annette and Lisa here to do this, and I can actually let you guys run the call, and I can sit in the background and just chime in when I need to. If that's okay with you, you guys want to do that?
Yeah.
All right, good. Okay. All right.
Okay.
You're better at staying on time than I am.
One of my gifts.
Yes.
Cool. It takes a team, man. Okay, David, your hand is up.
So I the last call, I was expecting my Stratagene results any moment. And instead I got back a message saying that my spit wasn't good enough.
Oh.
So I had bought two kits and it took a while to check with them that I could just use my second kit rather than waiting for them to send me my replacement kit. So I'm back in the waiting for their website to say they got my kit.
Did they have any suggestions about how to prevent that from happening again?
They had slightly revised instructions that they don't generally give out. And that was to rinse out your mouth and drink 8 ounces of water, then wait at least a half hour without putting anything else in your mouth. Don't brush your teeth. Don't, you know, nothing that would mess anything up. But the change was to drink the 8 ounces of water and wait the half hour.
And wait the half hour. Cool. Because, you know, they have a swab thing. If your spit doesn't have the right number, they do have the option to do a swab where they give you a thing and you swab your cheek. So that might be your next step if that doesn't work.
Okay. They did suggest I read somewhere that the spit was generally preferred if you can do that.
If you can. Okay, cool.
So I'm just going to share that.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thanks.
Hopefully you get it back soon.
Well, yeah. So other people might have success the first time.
And you have better spit. I wish you better spit, David.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Things you can't say to most people.
Looking forward to those results that are going to give me all the pathway charts with my genes layered on them. That's going to be really nice.
Yeah, that'll be good for you. Cool. Okay, thanks. Darcy, I saw your hand next.
I just shoved some food in my mouth.
Of course, sorry. We can come back.
No, it's good. Okay, so first I have to share my exciting news that my thyroglobulin antibodies are a one.
Yay!
So exciting.
Very exciting. And I'm just going to step in and remind, like, Darcy is great at remembering that. If you have a success to share first, we always like to hear that first. So just good job, Darcy.
Yeah, it's so exciting. And then my vitamin D is a 70. And my, my CoQ10 is normal range. So those are things I've struggled with for years, but going to a liposomal form has totally changed it.
Nice.
So yay. Okay.
Yay.
I am now struggling with, I'm still trying to tweak my thyroid. And so my numbers are going up. My thyroid TSH is 6.49 and it was a 5. And my free T4 is a 1.8 and my free T3 is 2.3. So it's lower. And my reverse T3 is going up. So I went back to my thyroid stuff and I wrote down in my notes to check on, is it Googaloo? Google. Is that how you say that?
Google lipids, yeah, Google.
Yeah, and chickweed to see if either of those would be something to consider. I know I'm also working on getting my essential fatty acids down and normalizing. So I'm upping my DHA. So I know that influences it. Any suggestions, any thoughts?
What about your, normally when we talk about thyroid.
Hey, Lisa, you're kind of hard to hear.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
I've ordered a new headset, but it hasn't arrived yet. Normally when we work with thyroid, we think about the adrenals because they're very linked together. Have you done any a Dutch test? Do you know what your cortisol is doing or anything like that?
I did a Dutch test this last, let me think, it's May. So I think I did it in October and my cortisol wasn't high. My DHEA was a little low and I was a little heavy on the estrogen.
And was the cortisol low then?
I'll have to pull it up. I'll give you a number. I don't remember it being bad.
Well, if it's, you know, the middle, you want to just see which side of the middle the cortisol is, metabolized and free cortisol.
Okay, here we go. What exactly do I look at to tell you that on my Dutch? I'm looking at the cortisol A, B, C, D.
Look at the first page and they have the dial. They have the top part that has the progesterone, estrogen, testosterone. And right below that, they'll have metabolized cortisol and they have 24-hour free cortisol.
So my 24-hour was 83.
What is it? Where is it pointing on the dial?
Is it closer to the lower end.
Okay. It's,
if this is the normal, it's right here at 10 o'clock.
Okay. And then the metabolized cortisol?
It's at 1 o'clock for 4,200.
Okay. So it's higher. It's higher than the free cortisol?
Yes.
Okay. So so you're producing cortisol? So it's above the medium, middle, let's say the median. So it's a little bit, okay. So that means that you're producing cortisol, but not a lot of it is available to your cells. And then you need to work on the clearance of it. There's usually thyroid conditions can actually block the action of cortisol there. And if your reverse T3 is high, then that's the inactive form of T3. And so we have to look at what nutrients you may be lacking there. And I would support, I would really always support the adrenals. So there I like adaptogens because we don't want to send your cortisol up or low because you're producing cortisol, but not a lot is available there. So rhodiola would be good. Holy basil would be good. Ginseng. And of course, what are you doing for stress management, for example, breathing techniques and things like that?
I do many vacations, breathing techniques, grateful attitude. And I am doing adaptogens, but maybe I should switch because I think the combination of what I have doesn't include all the things that you just mentioned.
You don't have to take them all, but you can take, you know, David Winston has a really good adaptogen and Herb Farm has one. There's a mixture of them, or you could just do rhodiola on its own.
Okay. You should rotate around or rotate off every once in a while.
Yeah. Okay. So if I am taking a dropper of adrenals and Kyrozyme ADR that I like when I am high stressed or if I have stressful things going on in my life. So outside of the adrenals, what should I look at? Should I be considering the chickweed or the gugulu?
Yes.
Okay. I was trying not to introduce too many new things and I thought I would ask you first.
Yeah. The other thing I would look at is your gut. Because of the conversion from if reverse T3 is high and the free T3 is low, then the conversion from T4 to T3 is moving down the pathway towards the reverse versus the reverse versus the free. Think about it this way. Reverse T3 is the brakes and free T3 is the accelerator. So for some reason, your body's saying slow down. And it could be like, it could be a gut imbalance because most of that conversion, well, not most of it, all of that conversion or most of it happens outside of the thyroid, about 25% in the gut, maybe another 50% in the liver, and then the rest of it in the rest of the body. So I always look at the liver and the gut to make sure that those are really healthy, to make sure that we're going from a free T4 to free T3 appropriately and not shooting it down to reverse T3. And then selenium is a nutrient, but a lot of the other minerals, magnesium is important there, but selenium is the one that has the biggest claim to fame.
Yeah, selenium. And so like Dr. Emery said, inflammation, toxins, so those are a lot of them coming from the gut can really increase the conversion of T4 to, or free T4 to reverse T3. So that would be good to look at what's going on in your GI tract, but also a very low calorie diet. So I don't know what kind of food intake you have. So anything that stresses, actually stress can also increase this conversion to reverse T3.
Okay. Yeah, and is it normal as I clean up my gut to see my thyroid kind of try to adjust? Is that normal? I used to be on thyroid medicine. So I'm really watching my thyroid change a lot the last 6 months. So I'm assuming this is just part of it, but is that normal?
Is it normal that, well, if you come off of the thyroid medication, then your thyroid gland is going to have to, it's going to have to adjust. How long were you on thyroid medication?
For 5 years.
Yeah. And how long have you been off of it?
7 months.
Okay. So I think wait to see by the end of the year how you're doing. There was a supplement that Dr. Rita Marie has been suggesting. That what is it called? That thyroid restoration formula? Was that?
It's from Restorative Formulations. It's ThyroCare.
Yeah, ThyroCare.
And it has a lot of the nutrients, the ones that you mentioned are in there, some other herbs. Ashwagandha is actually also a good one because it helps the body to make more thyroid hormones. So I think that it's a wonderful, do it for a couple of months. If it doesn't shift anything, then it's probably not going to. But I know people who are immediately start taking that and they start to feel their energy coming back. When you're, it's like a muscle, right? You've atrophied it because you keep giving the thyroid from the external and your thyroid isn't used to being able to make it. So you want to give it a lot more of the raw material so it can kick back in.
Okay. Okay. Good. Thank you so much.
Welcome, Darcy. Thanks. Sharon, I see your hand up next. Darcy, if you could put your hand down. Cool. Thanks. Sharon, you're muted. Okay.
We can't hear you.
Sharon.
Yeah. It shows that you're unmuted.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. Maybe your computer
sound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we go on and come back?
Yeah,
We'll come back. Brenda, you're next.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
I have several if there's time. So hopefully they're quick, but I don't know if this applies to this call or not, but I was wondering about painful leg cramps in the night, if that might be an indication of some deficiency or something?
Usually what comes is magnesium and making sure that you have enough minerals in general, but magnesium. So I would suggest, and maybe even rubbing magnesium oil or on your legs and making sure you have magnesium before. And have you heard of the magnesium loading test? You can try to figure out your dose that you need for magnesium.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, so you take up, you start off slow and then you work up to a dose where magnesium, it draws water to the gut. And so it'll, when you get up to a higher dose, it induces some gastrointestinal things, including diarrhea. So you know you're getting up to a dose that that you can stay at, let's put it like that, or just below that dose that causes diarrhea. Most people don't have enough magnesium, and it's ubiquitous in the body. It's involved in 200 or 300 enzymatic systems. Reactions. And the thing also with magnesium is it's a mineral and you need hydrochloric acid to help its absorption. So we have to think about gut health as well. So are you taking any magnesium?
I'm taking a supplement, and I'm also at night, I've been taking, are you familiar with a product called Calm? You mix it with water and drink it?
Yeah, I am familiar with Calm, and Calm has magnesium oxide in it, which is one of the forms we don't really recommend.
Okay.
It has magnesium citrate or something, but it also has magnesium oxide. I think it has magnesium oxide or chloride. So okay. I would think if you could just find a magnesium glycinate, or a magnesium citrate, a different form would be a good idea.
Glycinate or citrate. Okay, thank you. And another quick one is I've been trying to drink water in the mornings, like Dr. Rita Marie recommends. I started with the peppermint oil and lemon in it, and I kept getting stomach aches. I tried taking the peppermint out, finally figured out it's the lemon that gives me a bad stomach ache every morning. So is there some reason lemon in the water would hurt my stomach?
What kind of pain? Is it acidity pain, or is it, what kind of pain?
Acidity, and it kind of makes me very gassy and burpy, and it just hurts.
Okay, so like, don't take it, right?
Yeah, yeah. I stopped, but I just wondered why would lemon do that?
What brand of oil is it? Because not all oils are meant for internal consumption.
Right, but sometimes it's just fresh squeezed lemon juice. Mm-hmm.
So if you've got any gastritis, or you've got any kind of irritation or inflammation of the lining, anything acidic would. So it could be, I would check to see if you get the same response if you did apple cider vinegar instead of lemon, you know, small amount just to see. So it just might be it's concentrated enough in the lemon that it if there's some irritation there. And in that case, I usually recommend people look at things like slippery elm and DGL to try to heal that lining before you go back and do that.
Okay. Okay. And a quick question on, herb powders. I know, Dr. Rita Marie, you were talking about in one of the classes, the mushroom powders, you have to make sure they're extracts if you use them directly. Otherwise, you have to decoct them. But I was wondering about things like rhodiola and ashwagandha. Do those have to be decocted, or can you use those powders directly?
I would say it depends, right? So ashwagandha is going to be better. So if you just take a raw herb and you grind it up, some of the active constituents are not going to be extracted by your body as you digest it. So we either decoct it, or if it's powder, you can actually just put hot water on it and leave it for 15, 30 minutes and you're fine. You don't have to actually decoct it. But if it's actually the roots, you would want to decoct it. So the typical thing in decocting means you're boiling it or simmering it for, you know, 20, 30, 50 minutes, depending on what it is. Right. So I would say ashwagandha, yeah. And David Winston talked a lot about that. I asked him, I said, well, they sell all these ashwagandha powders. He said, you know, it's really not going to be that well absorbed if it's not an extract. But if you take it and you pour boiling water over it and let it sit for 15, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, then you will extract those constituents out.
Okay. Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Yeah. And I would say, as long as my mic is open, I'm going to say on the magnesium load test, if you go onto the site, the Nutrition Lab site, and you go all the way towards the bottom of the page, it says nutrients, and there's one on minerals. Click on that box. And in that, on that page, there's a magnesium loading, a document that tells you how to do magnesium loading.
Okay,
great document. It's a great document. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Sharon, are you back? Can we hear you now?
Yes, I changed my iPad. Just further to the comment about the muscle cramps in the legs, I was getting that when I first started with Dr. Emery, and I had to increase my magnesium considerably. And then also at night, I rub the magnesium gel on my legs and feet, and I don't have any problem now.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you.
It takes some time sometimes to replenish deficiencies, right? So we think, well, I'm taking magnesium, why is it not doing it? But if you've had a long-standing deficiency for a while, it could take a while to get it up, and it might take much larger doses than you might normally consider taking. So I've had people take 1600 milligrams of magnesium at a time, and I don't know if that's how high you had to get, Sharon, but it's just like, be persistent with it and just keep building it up. And the magnesium loading process will help you to shortcut that, so you know pretty quickly how much you need to do.
I take 900 spread throughout the day in capsules, and then the gel at night. So I'm over 1,000. Yeah. What I wanted to talk about was my oat test. When Lisa did the talk in January on oxalates, it was just that aha moment. You know, I sounded just like me. And so right away, I discontinued my high oxalate foods that I was eating every day, you know, the nuts, the curly kale and chocolate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a few things like that. And it wasn't until March that I had my oat test. And even at that, my oxalates were still really high. So my naturopath was working on that with me, but it also showed candida. So how long do you typically have to be on a candida diet?
I mean, do you want to be on a candida diet or do you want to remove the candida? I mean,
remove it. I'm doing the diet and she has me on treatment here as well.
Well, I personally don't recommend being on the candida diet, which starves the candida and they'll go into hibernation. And then if you try to remove them when they're in hibernation, you're not going to be really successful. So normally I would just say continue with the way I approach it is I would continue with your normal clean diet, but not starving the candida while you want to remove them. And a remove protocol could be 4 to 8 weeks
long.
Or 12 weeks, depending, you know, what else is going on there. Because there's usually not an overgrowth of yeast in isolation. Often there's bacterial overgrowth as well. Yeah,
I've got fungal infection. Yeah. She said I really didn't have to adjust my diet at all other than making sure I'm not having sugars. So is that your thought pattern as well?
Yeah, I mean, we generally speaking shouldn't have sugars. I mean, in general, just for our blood sugar and our health. But I mean, some of the low candida diets are really low carb and I just wouldn't do that. I mean, you want the yeast to come out and play. You want them there. They want to have something to eat so that if you're eradicating them, that you can get them. You
know. Okay. Okay.
And oftentimes, I don't know if she's given you that as part of the protocol, but things called the biofilm disruptors.
Yeah.
As part of the protocol, because what these organisms, whether they're candidas, funguses, or bacteria, they try to protect themselves and they form this biofilm. Think of it as pond scum that surrounds like bunches of them. And you go in there and you put in like whatever, biocidin or other kinds of strong antimicrobials, and it can't break through the barrier. So usually I start a candida, anti-candida protocol with a biofilm disruptor. So I do that for like a week or two and then start the killing process because it just, they're like, they want to survive and they're going to surround themselves by this gooey, sticky kind of thing. And things like serratia peptidase, which is an enzyme, has been shown to be really helpful at breaking that down, but always start slow. You know that. Always start slow and build it up to whatever, usually it's one or two capsules a day. And you do that for 10 days to 2 weeks. And then you can continue the biofilm disruptor. I usually continue the biofilm disruptor for as long as you the bottle lasts while you put the other stuff in. So you're really like, you're basically making them defenseless is what you're doing.
So what was that you said?
Serratia peptidase. I'll put it in the chat. Serratia peptidase.
That's a proteolytic enzyme. It's quite helpful. And I think Kirkman has a biofilm disruptor as well. But I mean, the normal antibacterial, antifungal strategies, we need to have a digestive enzyme that's normally part of it, whether you take a probiotic or not. Saccharomyces boulardii also helps combat the yeast overgrowth. And then a biofilm buster, and then whatever antimicrobial herbs that you are taking. So there's quite a few things that are good to have in this protocol.
Yeah.
Is there anything on the roadmap that talks about this?
Biofilm busters?
If you go into the gut.
About the whole protocol.
Yeah, the gut repair class should have that in there.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks. Michelle, you had your hand up next.
Hi. Wins. Gosh, I've been tweaking everything. I can't complain. I'm learning a ton and excited about it.
That works.
That's before good. I forget my question. So in the sweet spot with the curbing cravings, using MEG, chromium, and DHA, are there brands and doses and that are recommended with those?
You're muted. Document in there. It's a whole document, and it's called the keto supplement, whatever. I'll look for the link and I'll put it in.
Okay. I saw where it was recommended, and then I'm still like in the process of going through it all, but I thought knowing that early on would be really good.
Yeah, really good document, really comprehensive document. We put it together.
It's a nice document.
I'll find it.
And that's the primary reset diet in that program, correct?
The metabolic reset, you mean?
No, in the sweet spot.
Yeah, they have it. We call it the metabolic reset.
Oh, okay.
I'll find it for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is that it, Michelle?
I think for now.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Okay. David, I think you put your hand back up.
Yes.
Okay.
On the thyroid peroxidase antibodies, I got a 5 that's in the middle of the green where 9 is the threshold. Is that something I just don't worry about then?
I wouldn't. I would just, okay. We can get overly vigilant, you know, because we're always dealing with lab ranges. You know, what I always tell people is we have think about having 2 buckets. One bucket is of medical interest. It's what you talk to your doctor about. So doctors are looking for pathology. They're looking for illness. They're looking to diagnose something. And they're looking if you're outside of the range. And sometimes you have to be way outside of the range before they're even interested. And then there's things that are of nutritional interest. So that's where we come in. That's where we're looking for disbalances. And so we're looking for things that are high normal or low normal. That's things that are within the range. But I think we can get a bit too obsessive. I think we just...
My D-arabinol was maxed out on my ion test. So I have some kind of fungal yeast infection. Mm-hmm. I'll be getting my doctor's data back in a week or two. Does the candida infection throw off a whole bunch of other things that I shouldn't, that will recover when I treat the candida? So I have my palmitic and stearic acid or rock bottom, for example. Does, if I fix the candida problem, are things like my acid balance, my fat balances going to kind of bounce back?
Well, a lot of things in the body are connected. That connection, I don't think, is really one that is close. So I think, you know, for your fat balance, you just really need to focus on your omega-3s and omega-6s, and then throw in some omega-9s, and then it usually the rest of the balance. So what are your omega-3s and 6s looking at like?
They're broken down. That's why it's kind of confusing. So my omega-3s, everything's in the middle of the range, except one of them's in the lower quintile. And the omega-6s.
Which one is in the lower quintile?
The docosahexaenoic.
Is that 22 or is it
22, 6, 20? And 3.
Okay, so that's the, yeah, that's the DHA. So so you need to take a supplement with DHA in it. So you could take an algae form, or I don't know how you say it, algae.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sort of a plant-based form. You know, the fish get their EPA or their DHA from algae. So you can have an algae supplement.
Kelp, kombu cover that?
Well, not
okay.
Not sufficiently. Right. There will be some, but when it's low like that, you really want to replenish it. Kombu and all that would be good. It has lots of minerals in it. But in terms of the candida, I mean, it's always a question when, if you're going to address it or not to remove it. I usually start with the gut environment and then look at everything else before starting a remove. Because when you start a remove, you can remove a lot of good things. I just recently have a new private client who had been on antibacterial protocol, had decimated all her good bacteria, the bifido, lactobacillus, completely decimated. Because she was so fixated on the bacterial overgrowth. So we have to look at the whole gut environment, and we need to make sure that we get the good guys there working before we start, eradicating. Depends how much of a problem also it is, if you have symptoms and stuff like that, you know.
You know, with the candida, and then I forgot to mention this with Sharon, is that that can drive the oxalates up. So. Ah. You can, if you've got those bacterial, fungal kind of toxins that they produce, yeah, can drive the oxalates up. So sometimes people are focused on the oxalates, and they go, oh, as a side note, I'll go here, but you may not have to be as stringent about restricting oxalates if you get the gut terrain fixed. Right. And what Lisa said is so, so true. Okay, so we grew up with the medical model of kill it, kill it, kill it, right? Mm-hmm. Kill cancer, kill bacteria, kill these things. What we're really about is balance, because candida is a normal inhabitant of the gut. So are some of these others that what's called commensal bacteria. They're normal inhabitants. They only get out of balance when we throw them off balance by killing off our good stuff. And some of these strong antimicrobials will kill off your good stuff too. So suddenly you don't have enough bifidobacter, and these guys grow out of control, right? Yeah, so that's absolutely the kind of stuff we have to look at. It's all about balance. And we get, we grew up with it, right? Everything was kill it off, get rid of it, cut it out, whatever. And it's really about how do we restore balance so that it sits well.
I mean, we talk about the 5R protocol, but if you think of it simply, there's weeding, seeding, and feeding. We want to seed and feed first, I think, before we weed. We weed if necessary, but sometimes if we seed and feed, it'll take care of a lot of problems.
That's a wonderful analogy. Love that.
Run down. Nice. David, is that it?
I forgot to say that my win was that I got all these tests and got them done. I have a couple more tests coming in. And my productivity is cruising along. I'm getting stuff done. So yay. So I'll let other people go. And if there's time at the end, I might jump in again.
Okay, thanks. Brenda, I'm not sure if you have your hand up again or it just didn't take it down. So did you have something else, Brenda?
Sorry, I just didn't realize I needed to take my hand down.
Thank you. Because I can't. Sometimes, okay. And today I can't. So thank you.
All right.
All right, so Darcy, you're up.
Awesome. Okay, my next question is on restricted diet. So if someone is eating a restricted window of 10 in the morning to 6, am I understanding that the most benefit is if they actually have a couple days where they change that window, so it's not restricted the same every day? So like one day they would eat later at like 1 or 2 to 6.
I don't know that it's that important with that big a window. It's when you're doing really short windows that you want to keep the body guessing. So if you're typically eating from like 4 p.m. to 10 p.m. or 9 p.m. or 6 p.m. or whatever, the very small window that if your body gets used to all that intermittent fasting, sometimes it creates a problem and we want to keep it guessing. So basically you may want to have a day where you don't do such a restricted window, maybe once a week or once every couple of weeks. Instead of doing a 6 hour eating window, you have an 8 or 10 or 12 hour eating window. But you're talking about 8 to 6. Is that what you said?
10 to 6. So
10 to 6. So that's like 1, 2, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, you're at an 8 hour feeding window. Some people just do better by having an earlier window. Some people do better by having a later window. If I try an earlier window, I'll be eating all day long. It's done. It's over. Like, you know, I might as well just give up because I'm just going to be wanting eating all day, right? So it's very different from person to person. Some people, if they miss that breakfast in the morning, like they're just like, they're off all day. So you just really, I would find what works for you and stick with it. But if you are doing a lot of restrictive, like if you're doing a 24 hour fast, you know, you don't want to do that every day, right? You want to, some people do that actually every day. They do one meal and they just do 24 hours between. That's when the body's metabolic rate goes wonk because we get used to it.
I'm not there at all. I can make it to 1 o'clock. And then I start dreaming about food and thinking about what I'm going to make for dinner, and I can't get anything else done. So I have to eat.
See, that's your answer there, right? See how it works. Maybe you try 11 o'clock instead of 10 someday, but you know, it seems like that just messes you up.
But I have to say that's an improvement for me, because for the longest time at 7 o'clock in the morning, I was starving and jittery. And if I didn't eat breakfast, I would be hangry. So yeah, this is
you're improving. Yeah. For you. Okay. Find the window that works and just stick with it.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you.
Angela, you're next.
All right. So I don't have like a really specific question, and maybe this is going to be too broad to get really a clear answer, but I'm wondering, and I guess it really just depends on the patient and what their symptoms are. I guess for myself and me trying to do my own self-discovery, with everything, I'm overwhelmed with the amount of tests and what like hierarchy of which ones I should do first. Obviously they get expensive, so I can't just go and do every test that we have, you know, there. So I'm just wondering if there's some guidance into how to, what's going to give me the best bang for my buck, and also knowing this for my patients moving forward to be able to, you know, not just throw a whole bunch of tests and money down the, you know, out the window, not necessarily out the window, but, you know, out there, and then just have a ton of information to have to cipher through as well. So kind of, is there any guidance in that direction?
Well, it really depends on the symptoms that your patient has, right? And what you, so you don't, so testing isn't like throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks. You really are looking to rule things out or look for imbalances. And it depends really where they're at. I mean, first, you know, do a thorough history, look at their diet diary, make sure all the foundational issues are taken care of. You know, the diet is okay, blood sugar balance. For that, you don't need testing. Maybe you need blood work. I would start with blood work. That's the simplest place to start. Yeah. Most people have blood work. They go to their doctors once a year. And then from there, you can go on, depending on what their symptoms and their goals are.
Okay, so maybe I guess for myself, I've done some functional blood analysis. That's what I'm used to. That's what I do with my patients now. So expanding into like Dutch test. I used to work for Pathway Genomics. So I've done the DNA test, not as extreme as what they are now, like with the one we looked at in Shine. It's blanking my mind right now, but what would be, I guess, over a Dutch test, DNA test, or I guess to really understand, I've had some gut issues, kind of on and off, mostly just bloating, gas. But right now, what I'm struggling with the most is like just extremely tired, really fatigued. I mean, I know there's a lot more like depression. I've had some family losses this last year that kind of
threw me off emotionally. But now it's just kind of like getting out of bed. I'd rather just stay in bed all day long if I could. Energy is really bad. Motivation's not there. Stress levels are through the roof. Anxiety, stuff I never really experienced before. So I guess, what would you suggest me do in the next? I've done a stool test. I actually am waiting on the results for that because I was more concerned about my gut for a while, but now it's like all the other things are kind of amping up right now.
I would then, if you're thinking, asking about testing, is then the Dutch test, right? Okay. Would be a good one to do because that will give you the cortisol levels, and you can see where your cortisol is and if your fatigue is related to low cortisol levels.
Okay.
Yeah, and you've got to rule out anything else that could be causing the fatigue, like iron deficiency or, you know, just obvious things, or B12, you know, any kind of anemias. So those kind of things need to be ruled out before you start looking down other rabbit holes, you know?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to add my two cents to that. Yeah. Can I do that? My two cents? Okay. Yes. I am very, as much as I teach testing and as much as I love testing, I am a conservative tester. So I will start with the blood chemistry, which most people have. And if they don't, we do some basics there. We find some basic stuff to work on. We work on the habits, right? Where are some of the foods? Where are some of the nutrients? What about the sleep and the stress? I'm working on that to help with getting those things balanced before we spend a lot of money on tests. And I'm just going to tell you, request for you, that you be gentle with yourself. Mm-hmm. You've had a tremendous, horrific year. This is not just, oh yeah, my cat, you know, got a hernia and I had to take him to the vet. This is huge, right? And it's very common to have that stuff. I would look at some of the, certainly be kind to yourself, right? Doing things that make you feel good when you get up. And if you're not able to get up out of bed with all the stuff that's happened to you in the last year, I probably wouldn't be getting out of bed either, right? So I don't think it's a metabolic imbalance. I think it's situational depression. And yeah, there's herbs you can take to help support that. There's some adaptogens you can take to help build those adrenals. There's your B vitamins and vitamin C, but I don't know that you necessarily need testing to figure some of that stuff out, because to me, it's really clear why you're feeling that way. You know what I mean? And so taking some, you know, calming herbs, taking some adaptogens, doing the B vitamins, checking your Bs, looking at some of this stuff, like your zinc tally, you know, your zinc assay tests, and figuring out your zinc, and doing your magnesium load, doing your vitamin C load, because those are critical for good adrenal function. And yeah, you've had some major stresses and major losses. And I know you're like making light. I had some major losses. It's major losses, right? And so I don't know that, look at the stool test, see what's there, see if there's some gut imbalances that you can correct, because that will help you. That'll take some of the strain off your adrenals. So on top of the mental, emotional stress, you've got the physiologic stress of gut imbalances. And guess what? Stress causes a mess up with your cortisols and causes your gut to be out of balance. So I would start where you're at with that, address those imbalances, and then look to see, okay, what's next? Okay. And make sure your blood sugar, you know, you can get a meter and just make sure you're keeping your blood sugar steady. Make sure that, you know, part of your coping is not, you know, eating chocolate every night. Do you know what I mean? Because those things will contribute to that. So I think I would start with the basics with you. You know, that's where I would start.
What about like your transforming stress program, or look at the info sheet Dr. Reed Marie has on the sleepcations?
Thank you, Annette. Right. Sleepcations. Give yourself permission to just go to bed for a weekend and knock it up and stay in bed, you know, listen to some soft music and do the things to replenish, to nourish, right? We all like, oh, we got to get up and we got to do this. Why? Right? We've got, yeah, you have patients to see, schedule them later in the day, right? Schedule your hours differently so that it supports you. But yeah, a weekend, 3 days of just sleep vacation that you're allowed to be in bed for 12 to 14 hours could do you wonders.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that.
Grace you, give you a hug.
Thank you. I felt it.
Thanks. Michelle.
Oops, there she is.
Oh, okay. So I wanted to clarify, a great answer, ladies. Bravo. Back a question about the fasting. So the celebration that I had forgotten was that I actually tried the 24-hour fast for the first time and made it. But maybe that isn't, and I was going to try it again, but it just didn't feel right today. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll squeeze it in some other time. But if I'm already trying a 16 and if I'm already pretty good on a 16 and 8, were you saying that maybe that's good enough and the other cycling is just not necessarily important?
What I was saying is that, you know, everybody's different, so it's finding what works. If 16-8 works for you and you're really doing well with it, you have good energy, you're feeling great, great. If you're feeling like, well, maybe I need to do 24 because, you know, that's what everybody says and that's what the research shows and I want to do 3 days so I get into maximum autophagy and you pressure yourself and you go, oh, that doesn't feel right. Congratulations for checking in and saying, no, this didn't feel right. Let me ask you this. Were you trying to do it a second 24 hours right after the first 24 hours?
I had a day in between.
Okay. Yes. You want to have at least a day in between. Some people do really well with 2 24-hour fasts every week and then whatever they do in between. There's some evidence that for women more so than men, because our hormones tend to be more cyclical, that it can be, you get greater hormonal flexibility if you have some variation. So if you have a day where you do 24 hours in a week, and then you have another day where, you know, or 5 days where you're doing 18 or 16, 8, 18, 6, that's a little bit off. No, 16, 8. Then you may want to have a day of the feast day, right? Where you do 3 meals and you eat a little bit higher carbohydrate or higher protein or higher calories just to keep your body guessing. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes. And no, what was reinforcing about the 24 hours is, I mean, I could sense an improvement and it was that, but it was one of those days where I was just busy enough where I didn't even notice. Nice. Whereas most days I'm thinking, I can't wait till I'm going to eat. So I am trying to get the maximum benefit.
Once a week, start with once a week, do it once a week for a month. You go, oh, that was really good. Then go to twice a week and see if that works. If you still feel even a better improvement on the twice a week, great. If you start to get too thin or some other reasons, then you just go, oh, once a week worked really well. We all want to find our own fasting cycle. There's a program in the Empowered site. Not everybody here is in that, but on the Empowered site, you have access. It's called Stay in the Sweet Spot. And in the first 2 modules of that, I talk a lot about finding your ideal eating window, fasting eating window. So check that out. You don't have to go through the whole thing, but just that, the first two, I think it's the first 2 weeks of that, where there's some really good information on finding your own window.
Great. I've been getting the emails about the longevity. I mean, you're prepping for the sweet spot for this year. Yep. So you do it once a year and you get a new cohort. And then those people, some of them go into stay in the sweet spot. I guess I'm like big picture, how does that work ideally. If you feel like you've got it after that, then people stop and they move on to something else.
Yeah. Some go into gut repair. Some go into their adrenals or thyroid. Some take on the year long and they come into ERC. And several people on here have done that. It just depends. And we really help at the end of Sweet Spot to help you to decide what's your next step. There's some assessments that you do. And then we go, okay, here's where you can go next. Now, the beauty of this empowered self-care is that we really just started offering that last September, and it's got everything in it. So we don't have to decide, and we can help you and go, oh, when you come to these calls, we can say, oh, go check out this resource or check out that resource. So you have access to the whole shebang. With the Sweet Spot, anybody that's in empowered will get a link that says, hey, you get to do this for free. It's just part of it. You'll get all the calls. Anybody who's in NEPT, ERC, or the Empowered Self-Care, you should be getting it any day now. That says, it basically says, warning, do not register for Sweet Spot, even if I did a good job of offering it and you want to, because you get it for free. Yay. So that there's an email coming out any day now about that. Those who are just in the nutrition lab, we're going to offer you the opportunity to upgrade to do the Sweet Spot at a special discount. So that's the way it goes. So you'll get to do it with us and see how it goes. And Annette and I are going to do the live calls together. I mean, I'm going to do some of them. She's going to do some. She's going to be on all of them, but I'm going to do the first one with her. And then when we get to the point of the evaluation towards the end, then I'm going to work with her and we're going to help everybody to figure out what their next step is. Cause that's the thing, you know, that's why I love that you guys are in this membership, because health is ongoing. We don't just do a 12-week program and say, I'm done, I'm good. Now, some people it is, it's like the one missing link and that then they're good, but you got to keep it up. And a lot of times it gets hard after you finish the program, and then you fall back to some of the old habits and you're not quite there. So the inspiration of the group and these kinds of calls and going through it once a year as a group is really helpful. And we'll be doing more of that in the coming year, like doing the gut repair together as a group or doing adrenals or thyroid. There's more programs in there than we could actually do in a year. If we did one at a time, but we will do that. And we'll just like, some of them will be rotated. Sweet Spot will always do once a year, but we'll rotate through so you guys can really get the support of the group. Kind of like we did with the elimination diet. Those of you who were with us back in January when we did the elimination diet, it was just so helpful to be doing it as a group and hear other people. So we're creating community here, because out there, it's pretty ugly what people are eating and stressing about and all that. We want to create this safe haven in here for all of you. So, yeah.
My last thing is, there's, you know, trying to accomplish my own health and becoming a better clinician and becoming a better entrepreneur, like, it's hard to choose which one to focus on. Like, you know, I find myself thinking, okay, I'm really going to focus on this, but then, you know, this seems really interesting, and it's all interesting. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I don't know how people get it done. It seems like a big task.
It's step by step. It's like the question. So like, what's that kid's book? How do you eat an elephant? Which I don't like that now. Bite at a time, right? And so we try not to get distracted. We've really mapped it out in NEPT and in ERC and in the Empowered to just take you through, watch, follow the roadmap and do what's the next most important thing, right? And we can bring this up on one of the NEPT calls. I don't want to burden people here who are just here for their nutrition with that, but we can definitely bring it up on the next NEPT call, and I can help you to, because it is, it's like, I want it all. I want to learn it all now. And one of these days we will have one of those USB things that will be here, stick it in your head. But it takes time. It's taken me 30 years to amass the experience and the education and all the stuff that I spew out as if it's like candy, you know, but it took a long time to get to that level. And we just be gentle with yourself and patient with yourself, and just pick the next thing that seems the most important. And anytime you're going to take action, always ask, is this the next best step I can take towards my goal? Which is why at all of our programs, we start you off with, what are your goals? What's your vision? What's your mission? Is this the next best step I can take to get me to where I want to land.
Okay. I think she also has to focus on caring for herself.
Yeah, and that's the top.
Take care of you.
Yes.
The other stuff, you're not going to be able to do the other stuff.
Yes.
Or you'll be able to do it less. So you're important. Do you?
Absolutely. And that's the thing that's why we include the empowered membership in NEPT, because so many people drag themselves. If you go to medical school, you've been to medical school, you know what that does to you. It's not there to support you and nourish you. It's there to knock you down. And then you come out and you go, how the heck am I going to help people? Right? Because I have no energy. We're here to build you up. And then when you do, your brain works better and you can take in the knowledge and be there to support your patients much, much more effectively. I hope that helps. Thank you, Annette.
Yes, thank you.
Maybe we should all do a sleepcation.
Yeah.
A sleepcation together. We could do that as a group thing. Let's do it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Thank you.
We have no other hands up.
And I saw a question in here, and this is something you can reach out. What do you think is the best way for her to reach out? Can one of the NEPT people look at my Dutch test with me, especially with regard to estrogen? Because we don't have that as a standalone. What do we?
We do the blood chems as standalone, and then we have coaching packages.
So yeah.
Might be something we need to discuss.
Or she could do the blood chem lab, well, it could be a lab evaluation, just a lab.
Well, you know, if you sign up for the blood chemistry program we have, right? And you guys get a special if you go into Empowered, and I think in there's a link to it, and we offer a special for you guys because you're in the membership. If you sign up for that and just say, hey, I don't want to go over my blood chem, I want to go over my Dutch test instead, then you can get on the calendar with either Annette or Lisa and get that done. And we're working on that. We're working on having it be so that you can just sign up for a blood or a Dutch test or a oat test or something that's the one test you have. But honestly, the way that we really find it works the best is if you do the one test and then you get further, you know, we don't like offer it repeatedly. So if you want to just keep coming back and get one test done, we don't actually have that because we prefer to work with people on a package, you know, a basis, but for a first time, certainly can do that. And then Lisa or Annette can tell you, what's my next step, right? What do I do next? What labs might I need? What dietaries do I need? What supplements I need? So that's what I would recommend.
Yeah. Okay. So we had some hands pop up in the meantime. Darcy, welcome back.
I have lots of questions.
Well, we only have 25 minutes, so.
That's okay. No, that's all right. Okay, so my next question is on lifting weights. This is for myself and a friend. Lifting weights, and then the next day being like so sore you can't even sit down. So for me, I can relieve that with high doses of vitamin C. So then I was trying to figure out, what does that mean? What else is there that I'm not thinking of that would also help? And why is my body like that? Is it, and how do I figure out, is that lactic acid?
That's the first thing that came to my mind was lactic acid buildup. And so maybe you just need to work out less hard and oxygen, you know, when there's no more oxygen left, then you switch and it starts using up, and producing lactic acid. So maybe you need to figure out a different way of working out.
And that would be at least initially, right? So if you're in a state where your adrenals are not functioning properly, you can't work out as hard as if they are. And that either you're exhausted for days and can't exercise again, or you're very sore, to me says that you overdid what's your body's capacity right now, and that you're actually creating oxidative stress on it. So you figure out, like, you do half of that, and you see how you do, right? And we have to adjust to where we are at any point in time, because we're not always going to be able to do the He-Man. You know, my son goes in lifts, deadlifts 405 pounds. Like, if I try to deadlift more than 50, I'm a goner. You know, it doesn't work for me. We have to work within our capacity.
Okay.
And things that, you know, will help to dissipate the lactic acid. So, you know, eating in a real alkaline kind of way, breathing, you know, doing your heart math, keeping yourself in that low cortisol type state, is helpful as well.
And how does the vitamin C just help take the lactic acid out of your muscle? I looked up connection. I can find one. Very good one.
Here's the thing. When we try to do a reductionistic explanation of every little thing, it becomes more like Western medicine, right? We're looking at balance. We're looking at what does vitamin C, it reduces oxidative stress. What does excess exercise do? It increases oxidative stress, right? Your mitochondria, when your mitochondria have to work harder to produce energy, they produce a lot of oxidative stress, and we need to have more antioxidants to get rid of it. So that's how I would explain it, but not like, oh, there's this pathway here and this pathway here. No, it's more like the left brain wants to know.
You talked about adrenal stress. Vitamin C also feeds the adrenals.
Yeah, right. Just thinking that.
Yeah. So I think it's just you're exceeding your adrenal capacity right now. It doesn't mean you can't go back and do that kind of exercise later.
Well, the bad news is I only did like 12 minutes. But
12 minutes too much.
I guess so. Okay. And normally I don't have that. So I was just curious. And then my girlfriend worked out and she had the same problem. And I was like, okay, I'll ask about it my next call. So thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And just so everybody knows, just to set the record straight, these calls are for your own health care. And I know there's a lot of health practitioners here. So we try not to answer questions about somebody else's health on these, unless there's extra time. And unless it's like, somebody asked to ask it earlier and I thought, wow, this is really good for everybody to hear. But sometimes, people come on and say, well, my brother-in-law has, or my patient has this XYZ-itis disease, and how do I work with it? That's like, ask those on the practitioner calls, right? So I just want to make sure that's clear. But good stuff. Good questions.
All right, David, you're back.
Yeah. I'd asked my doctor to do all the thyroid tests that I could find on your list, and she didn't put in the thyroxine binding globulin.
You won't test it.
I see Dr. Rita is shaking her head and she's muted.
We only run that if we really see that there's a need for it. The main ones are TSH, total T4, free T4, free T3, and the antibodies. So there's six of them.
Yeah, it was a chore to get her to run the total T4, which she's a functional doctor and we've been doing this for years.
I argue with functional doctors about that all the time. You know, when you're trying to see where the breakdown in function is, you want to see all the places. So total T4 is what the body's producing, or the combination of what the body's producing plus what you're taking. Then free T4 is important. You want to see how well your body, and that's the that thyroglobulin that you mentioned. You can guess at that based on the ratio between total T4 and free T4. So you don't really need it unless there's something wacky and we're like, what the heck is going on? And then free T3 is what the cells actually use. And the conversion between 4 and 3 gives you an assessment of, like we talked about earlier, Lisa mentioned the adrenals and various nutrients, right? So those are the critical ones. And then you want to know, is the body attacking itself, right?
Yeah.
So those are the ones we need. So reverse T3, we run sometimes. Thyroglobulin, we run sometimes. Anti-thyroglobulin, we do want to run because that's an antibody against the thyroglobulin. But if you have elevated anti-thyroglobulin and your thyroid's not functioning properly, I can probably guess, or that the T4 to T3, free to total is off, I can guess that there's a problem with thyroglobulin. Make sense?
Yes. And it's a whole detective work. And like you said earlier, don't order tests until you have some indication. And each test I get back, like the ion, came up with two major things, like oxidation issues and the candida. And there's a hint of low potassium. And I have 4 ion tests now. So in 2017, I was right at the top edge of their scale. In 2015, I was in the second to the bottom quintile. And this time I'm in the bottom quintile for potassium. And what's mildly interesting.
This is an easy fix. You eat more potassium rich foods and you take potassium, right?
Yes.
You may have a metabolic, you may have a genetic thing that causes your potassium not to be absorbed. You may have low stomach acid, but if it's potassium only, it's likely not a global problem with all minerals. So, and low glycemic diets oftentimes are lower in potassium because you don't have bananas, you don't have potatoes, and you don't have other sources of it.
Yeah, I've been having kiwis, but this kind of mildly explains why when I supplemented with potassium and then had a reaction, you know, just was bad. That was when I was high, probably. Oh.
Yeah.
And now I'm low again. I pulled out my what's called half salt. It's half sodium chloride and half potassium chloride. And I'd had that in my cupboard for a decade. So it was for someone else. So now I'll use it.
Good. Yeah, get it up there. It's very easy to retest potassium too, because you just have to do a blood test. It's one of the few minerals, vitamins, you know, micronutrients that the blood test is perfectly.
Well, it wasn't on my huge, you know, $2,000 blood test. That we got at Quest. I didn't see it until I got the ion test. I added phosphorus to my test to get a baseline for the future. You know, they just don't test potassium normally, apparently, unless you have like kidney issues or something. Because my mom had kidney issues and we were checking potassium, phosphorus, and a couple other things religiously, like
part
almost every week.
CMP. But potassium is part of the normal CMP.
Yeah.
I'll look again.
And you can always get it separately.
I
just go to Direct Labs and order whatever the other people don't want to order. I'm just like, okay, fine. I'll do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
So.
Yeah. Okay. Good questions, though. I mean, that's the thing. Like, when you look at Western medicine, doesn't teach what to do if there's elevated antibodies. So why should we test it? They're going to do the same thing, whether the antibodies are elevated or not. So just text TSH, right? Whatever. And then the same thing with various and sundry minerals and things like that. It's like, if they don't know what to do about it, if it's off and it's not an indication of a severe pathology, then, oh, well, let's not test it. But we look at ratios between things. We look at, you know, is this high, is this low, is it trending in a direction of low versus high, and that gives us a lot of really good clues as to what's going on.
I marked my ion results with little ticks for my previous tests so I could see whether it was bouncing around or trending.
And
there's some of each all over the place. It's like, I was hoping everything would be better, but no, there are things that have moved in all kinds of directions.
But you also had a luckier day, then. You know, you had some loss this past year as well.
Yes.
I'll just say I see you as a practitioner in the making, because you are so analytical and you are so conscientious about it. So just saying, you're next.
If my memory comes back, I'll definitely think about moving in that direction. Right at the moment, I do computer stuff because every time I come back to it, there's everything I've done right in front of my face to remind me where I was at.
Have you done the the neurotransmitter test more the assessment test? To see if your acetylcholine is one of the abnormal. So on the site where it says discover your imbalances, one of the tests in there is neurotransmitter.
So there's a whole neurotransmitter section on the ion test.
Yeah, it doesn't test all of them though. So I don't know if it doesn't test acetylcholine.
No, it doesn't test acetylcholine. You could do the assessments.
Arsenic is remaining, is not coming down. I have to work on that.
And it's an easy one, especially when you get your genetics back. You'll see if there's PEMT.
That's why I was disappointed not seeing those
sooner.
Look
for PEMT on that. And if that's like, you know, yellow or red, then that's something to look at as far as acetylcholine. And, you know, easy one for that is adding some sunflower lecithin to your smoothies, right? That helps you to get those up.
That's related to the arsenic?
Could it be related to arsenic?
Oh, no, that was, the PEMT was related
PEMT
to which?
PEMT is phospholipids.
Choline, you want to be taking choline, yeah.
Choline, yeah, specifically for choline, but yeah. Okie dokie. How are you? I think we're at the end of our, oh, we still have what, 10 more minutes?
Yeah, but you have a question about mud water. About what do you think about mud water?
What is mud water?
It's black. It's a black water.
I got plenty of it in my backyard after a rainstorm.
You're welcome. Thank you, David. It has like minerals in it.
Oh, is it kind of like fulvic acid minerals? Let's see, mud water is a coffee. No, it just came up like with a pop-up. Let me see if I can get rid of that. Coffee alternative, organic ingredients, within the 1/7 the caffeine of coffee. So it still has some coffee. It has cacao. That's where the concept of masala chai, turmeric, sea salt, cinnamon, chaga, cordyceps, and lion's mane, nothing else. Well, sounds awesome to me. Sign me up.
Right, I was confusing it with something else.
Yeah, unless you have really serious issues with caffeine, the small amount of in the cacao might be a problem, but yeah, sounds good to me. I never heard of it before.
All right, thank you. With Michelle and Brenda, and then that'll probably be it because we only have like 10 minutes. So Michelle.
Yeah.
Do you have recommendations on weaning off of caffeine? Something more gentle than a...
than cold turkey.
Yeah, than cold turkey.
Some people transition to like green tea first if you're coming off of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
That works for some people. And then there's like, what are those?
The mushroom.
There's other coffee.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things here, right? So you want to go off of it so you don't get, you don't have the headaches and the serious withdrawal, right? So go to green tea and then substituting. Right, substituting a little by little, you can go to 75% coffee, 25% green tea, and you can gradually pull it down. If it's the flavor and the beverage in the morning, which I hate, I can't even stand the smell of it, but then you need to just find something yummy like this mud water. Sounds like a great alternative because it's got so many adaptogens. I mean, it's got lion's mane, which supports brain health, and cordyceps, which is energizing, and chaga, which is immune. And there's so much other stuff in there. So something like that could be, but make it a point and give yourself a time frame. Because what happens a lot is people start to do it and then they go, oh, I'm going to go out with my friend. I'm going to have some, espresso. And then boom, you're starting again. So it's like, don't make yourself go through it multiple times. And it's also looking at, is the coffee, if you need the coffee because it gives you the lift, right? Then it's something like this where you're getting the adaptogens and helping support you and finding out why.
So if it's really the taste of the coffee, maybe like the taper with decaf and...
Yep, you can do taper with DTAC. The other thing you can do is as you taper off, you can always, if you really like the taste, medicine flower has these little extracts and mm-hmm. they have one that's coffee. And you can just put a couple of drops of that in your chaga tea or whatever else you're substituting for it. Mm-hmm.
Oh, what was that brand again?
Medicine flower.
Oh, medicine flower.
Yeah, I think they have them on Amazon. I've seen them there. Mm-hmm. I get the chocolate ones because I hate coffee, but it's so potent. When we had an event once and they sent us samples for everybody for freebies. And it was in my living room, like sitting there in the box for a couple of, days. And I'm like, oh, what is that? Why is there so strong a coffee flavor here? What's going on? Is somebody in my kitchen making coffee? And they're very potent. And you just probably need a drop or two in a cup of anything. And it makes it taste like coffee.
Okay. I mean, do you separate it out coffee, not only for the caffeine, but also because of the acidity?
Yeah, all the tannins. Yes, it's very acidic. Yeah. And it has been shown, there's studies that show that it damages the gut lining. So you do want to be careful about that. And then you also can, I mean, there's a lot of reasons. Then you can look at it. What about the genetics? What about CYP1A1, 1B2, 1A2? Those are specific SNPs that the body is using. That's specific pathways the body's using to get rid of the coffee as a detox. And they also work with the estrogens. So it, it puts you at risk of excess estrogen symptoms. So you have to look at those as well. So there's a lot of reasons I have for wanting it. I know there's a lot of health practitioners that are big fans of coffee and have no problem with it, but I'm like the oddball in my class when I go and talk to people about getting off of coffee.
All right. Great. Great ideas. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Brenda, and then I'll probably be it. Really?
Okay. Hi again. My question is about blood glucose, which is my main problem that I've been working on for a while. And just generally, can you give me some ideas of things that might cause my blood sugar to go up too high other than what I'm eating? Because I've had a number of times just eating low carb vegetables at dinner and it'll go up into the 120s afterwards. And I'm trying to figure out why that happened. Or another example would be in the morning, intermittent fasting, it keeps going up in the morning after I get up for hours. So any thoughts on why that might be happening?
I'll let Annette handle that. That's her specialty.
You see me sitting here mouthing stuff? So emotions can cause blood sugar to go up, hormones, and there's a thing called dawn phenomena where blood sugar will go up in the morning, and that's related to the cortisol and the waking up process. So those would be the first three things that came to my mind while you were speaking.
And sleep.
Yeah. Did you sleep well the night before or the 2 or 3 days before?
I don't sleep well at all. And that's something I don't know what I can do about that either.
Sleepcation. It's my theme today, sleepcation. We need to do those. Working on the earlier Sharon was talking, no, it was you as well, I believe, the magnesium. Mm-hmm. If you put magnesium oil, and I imagine it would work with the gel, on your shins at bedtime, it helps some people to sleep. I laughed at the chiropractor who said it to me, and then I had to go eat crow because it worked. I was like, all right, it worked. So you could try that to help with the sleep. Magnesium is also needed for blood sugar control. So that could be a little piece of it.
Have you done the Sweet Spot program?
Not actually done the program. I have, you know, all the menus and recipe guide. I actually went through that on my own for 4 weeks.
So I would suggest when we offer this, you'll get a good discount if you're in Nutrition Lab. I would suggest you go through it because we go through all the other things besides foods. It sounds like you got a good handle on the food part, but there's other pieces. For me, it was asleep that was throwing my glucose off. And I still find I'm really being much more diligent about doing the really good sleep, like 7 to 8 hours a night, because if I don't, then my blood sugars go up like just by eating cauliflower. So yeah, you're much more, so I would definitely recommend you do that.
And can there's a whole section on sleep. The magnesium oil, can you recommend a brand or someplace to get that? Or
I use Ancient Minerals. I've gone and bought whatever Whole Foods has on the shelf. I'm not a fan of the Now product line, so I don't buy that one.
Is it an essential oil or just a magnesium oil?
It's in a little bottle or a bigger bottle. It's, you know, like inch and a half, about an inch in diameter. It's an oil.
Okay.
It's not an essential oil.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And usually at Whole Foods, it's on the bottom shelf.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. Okay. We have 3 minutes.
Here's a question, David. Answer to that. Have scientists studied the sleep and blood sugar relationship? Absolutely. Just go look it up. There's tons of studies that show that insulin resistance one bad night of sleep in a normally healthy person will throw you into temporary insulin resistance the next day, and that over time it's very, yeah. So just do a web search, you see that.
Yeah. Sharon, if it's fast, go.
Very fast. Okay. I use a magnesium gel at night, and I'm just wondering, if you use magnesium oil, does it come off on your sheets?
I don't have an issue with it. I would use that. I don't. I know someone that doesn't like the feel of it. So she puts it on, waits 15, 20 minutes, and then wipes off the excess. If gel's working for you, then work with the gel.
Stick with it.
Okay. Yeah.
You're welcome.
Awesome, guys. Thank you. Thank you, Lisa and Annette, for all your great wisdom. Thank you, all of you, for your amazing question. Magnesium caused my skin to feel painful. Yeah. Then take it orally. If you're having, you're having issues with it, just, you know, whatever doesn't work for you, you don't do, you know, you can try to figure it out, but in the meantime, don't do it. And then just find another route of administration. A lot of stuff goes into sleep. It's not just magnesium, but that was a throw it out. And there's a lot of that, I mean, a ton of that gone that we go through in the sweet spot. Yeah. So yeah. Thank you everybody for a great call. And I will see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
You're welcome. You guys are amazing. All the questions you ask are so, yeah, just so thought-provoking and so helpful for everybody else. So I appreciate you.